Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. When he beats the bushes for the story, he beats the crap out of them. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we're back. Hockey Central at noon. It'll be Millard, Kiprios, and McLean. Jim Matheson of the Edmonton Journal. Join the boys at 12:40. The Edmonton Oilers bouncing about from crisis to crisis to crisis to crisis to crisis. Eddie Olchuk of the NHL and NBC was just on with us, and I think he kind of laid it out there a little bit for the Edmonton Oilers. It's just the answer seems so obvious. Maybe it's too obvious. But, man, that organization certainly looks like it's just absolutely paralyzed with fear right now. And as Eddie Olchuk and I said in our discussion, you know, the mark of a good organization in any sport is knowing what you have. It's not just figuring out what the other team has and what you have to do to get that commodity from the team when you're working in a trade. You've also got to have a real sense of self. You've got to also have a real read on the players you're trading. And most importantly, you've got to trust yourself. And from the outside, that appears as if it's an organization that just is just terrified. Just terrified to make a move with one of its young players. So Hockey Central at noon, Jim Matheson of the Edmonton Journal. I'm sure he'll have some thoughts about that. And I know that Millard, Kiprios, and McLean will have thoughts about that. The hockey world still reacting to yesterday's sad news, the passing of Pat Quinn at the age of 71. A lot said about Pat Quinn yesterday, a lot written about Pat Quinn. Scotty Morrison of Hockey Central, who covered those Leafs teams, knows Pat Quinn very well, knew Pat Quinn very well, I should say, wrote a terrific piece on the Sportsnet website. You can read it on sportsnet.ca. Scott Morrison joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Scott, thanks so much for doing this today.
Oh, my pleasure, Jeff.
I was kind of on the periphery of hockey coverage during that time. I was focusing mostly in baseball. Every now and then I'd parachute in. And I think Chris Johnson, I think, summed up for a lot of people the importance of Pat Quinn, the man, and that, you know, Chris talked about how much time Pat Quinn always had for a young reporter. And it kind of got me thinking about something that Glenn Healy said yesterday, and it's kind of a theme we've been working on with Pat. He right up to the end, Scott, he just seemed cool. He was the type of guy that a 12 or 13-year-old hockey player would look at, and you'd go, yeah, that guy's cool. I don't know any other way to put it.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And he could relate to so many people. And you've heard the stories, and I saw a lot of them, that he was as comfortable talking to the Zamboni driver as he was to the assistant coach or to one of his players or to a fan. He would get engaged with people. And I mentioned the anecdote in the piece I wrote for .ca, is that being at the Winter Classic last year in Detroit, and all the Leaf alumni, or a lot of the Leaf alumni, rather, were there, and our crew was staying in the same hotel. And one moment I was in the lobby, and Pat and his wife Sandra had come in, and a lot of people get engaged in conversation. They turn around, and there's Pat and my 14-year-old son talking to each other about hockey. Mm-hmm. And Pat's quizzing him about it and is interested in wanting to know what he has to think about things and what he wants to say about things as my son was listening to him. And that's exactly the reaction he had afterwards. He says, wow, what a guy, you know. And it was just one of those amazing moments. But Pat could relate to people of all ages and was fascinated about other people. And you think back to the 2002 Olympics, and he got as much joy out of the women winning. Haley Wickenheiser did tweeted about it yesterday.
Yeah, I read that. Was great.
Well, one of the books I did, I remember sharing the story about just, you know, Pat and the coaches being in their dressing room after the win with tears in their eyes and as excited about their victory as what was ahead for the men, and wanting them to be a part of the men's victory as well. So it was just amazing personality in that regard. And I had the great pleasure to know him from when I was starting out as a young reporter on the beat in the 80s when he was coaching in Los Angeles, and the likes of myself and Frank Orr and Jim Christie were on the traveling at the time, and you'd go to the rink and the Kings were just so far away and we didn't have internet, as you know, at the time. And we'd go and cover a Kings practice just to catch up on the team, and Pat would sit there and just engage you for an hour and want to keep you that much more, just talking hockey and finding out what was happening in the rest of the world about the game. And I spent 22 days in Moscow with him in 1986 at the World Championships, and I think that's where we really were able to forge a relationship that lasted a lot of years. So he had the prickly side to his personality, and he could be a stubborn Irishman when he wanted to be, and he had the scowl when he needed it, but beneath it all, and sometimes that presence that he had, the towering presence, as a lot of us like to call it, could camouflage the big heart that was beneath it.
You know, Scott, the other thing, too, when I think of guys like Pat Quinn, we've all run across, maybe not so much in hockey, because I think hockey coaches are cut from a different cloth, but we've all run across guys who, coaches or managers, who sort of have such an exaggerated sense of self that they almost become caricatures. You know, they almost sort of let the public image of them take over. Pat Quinn, as you said, big guy, could dominate a room, you know, the affable Irishman with the huge heart. But he never became a caricature. There was always something genuine about Pat Quinn, regardless of where you ran in him, regardless of the situation. He came into the studio one time. He was on the air with us a couple of years ago. And, it was Pat Quinn. I mean, that's all it was. It wasn't Pat Quinn, hockey coach, Pat Quinn, tough guy, Pat Quinn, hard-drinking Irishman, Pat Quinn lawyer. It's just Pat Quinn.
No, absolutely. What you saw was the real deal. And there were many layers to it. He didn't suffer fools if it was a situation where he was protecting his players or protecting his hockey team. But then he would often come back and make sure that at the end of the day that his message was clear as well. And so if there was a prickly kind of situation, he would make sure that everything was clear when all was said and done. And no, he didn't take himself that seriously to think that he was bigger than all the rest of it. He was just part of it. And he never lost sight of his roots, and he never lost track of where he fit into the big picture of all of this. And yes, he could be the boss man around, certainly when he was in Toronto and Vancouver, running the organization from a hockey perspective. But again, he never lost sight of who he was and how important the people around him, from the players on up, were. And there's been anecdotes about trainers talking about that he cared about them as much as he cared about his captain. And that wasn't lost on people, and that was a great trait that Pat had.
It's kind of interesting because I don't think people would say that Victor Tikhonov and Pat Quinn were fellow travelers, that there were a lot of similarities. But Victor Tikhonov, a tremendous Russian hockey coach, 3 Olympic gold medals. He was also the coach of the team that fell to the United States in the Miracle on Ice team. I mean, he passed away on Monday in Russia at the age of 84. And you got to know Victor. I think you got to know Victor a little bit, did you not, through your international travels?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it was always hard to get
sure
close to those, as you well know. I mean, it was your access to the coaches and the players was limited at times, although when they did have some of their tours of North America, they'd let their guard down a little bit. And again, he was a stoic presence behind the bench, and he was kind of the stereotype of what we thought the Soviets were, and certainly how they were to present themselves. But again, away from the rink, had a more engaging personality, certainly from the people who knew him. What he was around his players is what he felt he had to be. And there wasn't a warm relationship, but it was a working relationship, and the respect factor was totally immense from what his players felt about him. But again, there was a different personality when he got away from the rink, when he was able to let his guard down. But at that time, you didn't, and we didn't get the ability to see a lot of that.
I mean, one of the things with Victor Tikhonov, he coached for so long that he coached a couple of generations or a couple of groups of Russian players. And, you know, Healy was making this point yesterday about Pat Quinn. You take a look at the teams that Pat coached, whether it was the NHL or that junior team, which to me may have been one of the more remarkable jobs he did as well. And Healy talked about how there's such an art to being able to relate to 18-year-old kids in 2006 or 2007 or whatever it is, and 34-year-old NHL players in 1980, and, you know, 34 NHL players in 1990. It's almost as if Pat it's almost as if he was all things to all people when it came to dealing with players of different age groups and different eras.
Yeah, well, you said it off the top, Jeff, just that, you know, for a 12-year-old kid, that somehow could be a relationship there. And I mentioned my personal anecdote. And, you know, it's funny because I was thinking about it the other day, is that one of the things Pat did was he really engaged his veteran players, and he allowed them to kind of police the dressing room, to set the tone. And he didn't have to be the guy. He would go in there and talk to the players about you weren't doing very well or you did very well and all of that. But in terms of the temperament and the discipline within the room, he allowed his veteran players to kind of set that tempo. And there was often a misconception because he did, engage his veteran players that way, that he didn't relate to his younger players. And to your point, for him to go out and win gold with the under-18 team and then the World Junior team just spoke volumes about, in some ways, how he's a little bit misunderstood as a coach at times, and just how wide-ranging his talents and skills were as a communicator to be able to relate to players of all ages on all levels. So it was very much amazing in that regard.
Scotty, it was great of you to join us today. Thanks so much.
Oh, my pleasure, Jeff.
Scott Morrison of Hockey Central. Just hearing Scott talk about himself and Frank Orr and Jim Christie of the Globe and those road trips. There was I can tell you that the Toronto hockey media corps back in the day, it was sort of the classic old newspaper style of trying to kick the hell out of each other during the day, trying to get scoops, trying to beat the other guy as badly as he possibly could, and then getting together for dinner. And Scotty Morrison, Frank Orr, and James Christie, it's a pretty good dinner party right there. So the Cleveland Cavaliers, to change focus, the Cleveland Cavaliers beat the Orlando Magic last night. Actually, LeBron James kind of put the Cavaliers on his shoulder. And after calling himself out, went off as the Cavaliers beat the Orlando Magic 106-74 in Cleveland. LeBron James, 29 points, 16 in the first quarter. The Cavaliers broke their four-game losing streak. One of those losses, of course, coming at the hands of the Toronto Raptors. There's LeBron James on Monday, and this is his quote. "I stink. I'm my biggest critic. I wasn't happy with my play the last week. No one puts any more pressure on me than myself. You go out and you just don't talk about it. You show it too." This after the Cavaliers were 0-4. Now, a lot of people thought it would take time for the Cleveland Cavaliers, especially, I think, more than anything else, for Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, and LeBron James to kind of figure it out, to kind of figure out how to keep the ball moving, to figure out what it is going to take to keep all three of them happy. I mean, it's natural. You bring LeBron James back, you've got Kyrie Irving, and now you're bringing in Kevin Love. It's natural that it's going to take some time for guys to work things out. But I don't think anybody imagined that the Cavaliers would look so bad trying to figure things out. I think a lot of people just assumed that this is how it would go. The Cavaliers would struggle. LeBron James would single-handedly win the game. And then the next night they'd struggle, and LeBron James would single-handedly win the game. That's I think the vision most people in the NBA had for the Cavaliers, and then at some point it would all click together, and they'd run away with the Eastern Conference title. Jeff Zilgut is the national basketball writer for USA Today. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Zilgut. Jeff Zilgut joins the Jeff Blair Show. Mr. Zilgut, how are you?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Still trying to figure out the Cleveland Cavaliers, but yeah. I guess I have a lot of company. Is there? You know, Jeff, I was making the point before you came on that most people, I think, looked at the Cavs and thought, okay, LeBron's there, Kyrie Irving's there, Kevin Love is there. It's going to take a while for things to work out. I don't think a lot of us thought that it would look as bad as it has looked as they tried to figure out what was going on.
I agree with that, Jeff. And the one thing that I wrote this week is that maybe LeBron James was the true realist mm-hmm. in all this from day one. Now, whether you believe him or not, he's kept the same message that he said this would be a challenge. His patience would be tested. And it was going to be difficult. And I think I heard a little bit the tail end of what you were saying, that even if the Cavs were struggling, LeBron would put the team on his back and carry them across the finish line every time. And as I was with the Cavaliers for the first six games of the year, the thing that sort of stuck out to me is that I think LeBron truly contemplates doing that at times, but he doesn't believe that that benefits the Cavaliers in the long run. And so there's a little bit of me that says that he forsakes a victory in the name of teaching this team to play the right way. And so maybe a loss is better at times. And that's why we saw maybe early on, Jeff, a couple times where you saw LeBron maybe disengaged isn't the right word, but maybe not put the team on his back. And it's to show that I'm not going to do this every night. This isn't the way we're going to play winning basketball for 82 games plus the playoffs. And he's been sending little messages, whether they've been on court, to the media, or otherwise. And he wants that team to figure out to play the right way, which is the way he loves to play, which is the way the Cavaliers played and other good teams in the NBA. The Spurs, just not those teams. But you share the ball, you play hard defense, and when things are going badly, you don't revert to old ways. And I think the Cavaliers still do that at times with Kyrie, with Deion, and those aren't the only two to blame. You know, Kevin Love shares in this. They revert to old ways, which is I'm going to try to do it all myself all at once, and LeBron doesn't want, you know, you got to work through it, and you see teams who have been together a little bit longer right in your backyard right now mm-hmm. who understand that better than the Cavaliers do right now.
It's Jeff Zilgut on the Jeff Blair Show as we discuss the Cleveland Cavaliers and a 106-74 win over the Orlando Magic on Monday night. In the six games you spent with that team, Jeff, what was your sense of the relationship between David Blatt and LeBron James?
Yeah, so it's a very interesting dynamic to follow, Jeff. And so if you just want to get down to the bottom line, is that from what I've been told and the way I've also watched it develop, is that David Blatt has LeBron James's ear and support.
Mm-hmm.
And if LeBron James is going to talk about his maturity over the past 4 years, being with Miami, one of them is learning to trust the coach. I don't know how much he trusted his coaches in the first 7 years of his career. I don't know how much he trusted Eric Spoelstra for much of the 2010-11 season. But what LeBron James saw at the end of the day, especially after a couple championships, is that he was a much better player when he was forced out of his comfort zone and asked to play a different way, a different role, do different things, and he became a better player, and he realized that. And so he is willing to give David Blatt that kind of time. He realizes 13 games is not the time to be determining whether or not the coach is sending us in the right direction. And also LeBron, before he starts, you know, tinkering with, hey, is this guy the coach for the long term? He needs to see all the guys I mentioned before, Kevin Love, Kyrie, Tristan, Deion Waiters. He needs to see those guys get a full buy-in, not only on offense, but defense too, and then see once they're full buy-in, which LeBron knows what that looks like, then what are the results, and is what the coach is doing, is that working? Last week when I saw the Cavaliers in Washington, I asked people, you know, who are around the team, in the locker room all the time, what that relationship is like. And right off the bat, I was told that it is LeBron is much more amenable to what David Blatt is teaching right now than he was in that first couple months with Eric Spoelstra.
Interesting.
And there's probably been a turnaround, or not a turnaround, but even more adamant support from LeBron toward David Blatt internally in maybe the past 10 days or so. And that he realizes that these guys that he's playing with need to buy into that system. Again, like I said, before he starts making, you know, or calling out the coach or putting the blame on the coach, that kind of thing. And again, I think that's part of that maturity that he's talked about. You know, he's not throwing coaches under the bus. He wants the process to play out. I know we all got tired of hearing that word in Miami all the time, but LeBron understands it, and he knows a lot of guys on the team don't understand that.
Jeff Zilgits, the national basketball writer for USA Today, he's speaking to us on the Jeff Blair Show. I spoke to a visiting club broadcaster last week. We were talking about the Cavaliers, and the point that this person was making about the Cavaliers. You know, he said everybody talks about how LeBron James has to sort of adapt to David Blatt and Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love has to come in and adapt to LeBron and David Blatt, et cetera, et cetera. This guy's point was, Kyrie Irving's the guy that this is on. Kyrie Irving's the guy ultimately who has to make this work. And this is going to be a test of Kyrie Irving's maturity and also, frankly, Kyrie Irving's ability to be unselfish. Do you see it that way as well? Do you see him as being kind of, you know, if you want to have some sort of diagram where it's Love, LeBron, Kyrie Irving, and David Blatt, some sort of four-angled diagram that really Irving is the guy that ultimately has to give the most to make this work?
I do side with that, Jeff. I don't know if I'm putting percentages on it. You know, I don't know how close to being equal all those points are. I think they're all very close, but I do buy into the fact that Kyrie has to buy into all of this. And while we like to focus on the Blatt-James relationship, how about the James-Irving relationship? Because we know this. And I am part facetious here, but there's a truthfulness to it, is that LeBron James runs the show here. We saw that with the Kevin Love, Andrew Wiggins trade. And if you're not buying in, I'm not saying LeBron is going to, you know, trade Kyrie Irving, but eventually Kyrie Irving would be the odd man out in this situation if it didn't work out. We know LeBron's there for the long term. We can't say that Kyrie Irving is. And so that's why it does go on him. And that's why, again, Jeff, I've seen, you know, the verbal messages, the looks that LeBron gives. You know, he doesn't want Kyrie out there doing an and-one dribbling demonstration. Mm-hmm. That's not the way it gets done. Now, what people inside the locker room who have won championships with previous teams will tell you is that that's what Kyrie was asked to do for for his career in Cleveland. And again, that's what I was saying. They revert to old ways sometimes. And, you know, LeBron mentioned bad habits, and I know that took off, but it's true. You have to break these guys of bad habits. And when the offensive play, when the first option doesn't work, it doesn't turn into an isolation one-on-one show. There's other options within the set. Work it through to, you know, the final 5 seconds of the shot clock. Too many times you see the Cavaliers' offense break down. And again, it is a teaching experience and a learning experience, but I do believe that a lot of it depends on how much Kyrie will buy in long-term. Jeff, we look at this team. When the Cavaliers have won games this year, now they don't have many great victories over winning teams, but when they do play well, let's just take last night for example, they are moving the ball, they're getting assists. When they don't play well, the opposite happens. Don't move the ball, not enough assists. And Kyrie needs to see that and really buy into this is the winning way, this is not the winning way. But again, it's been a long time since he's really had to play that way and seen the results. They've never had to work through struggle. It always just sort of falls apart and disintegrates. LeBron wants to see them work through struggles and come out on the other end with a victory following what the game plan is.
Jeff, it was great you to join us today. Thanks so much.
Hey, Jeff, have a good weekend.
You too. That is Jeff Zilgut. He is the national basketball writer for USA Today. You can follow him at Jeff Zilgut. That's Z-I-L-L-G-I-T-T or Z-I-L-L-G-I-T-T in honor of U.S. Thanksgiving. He does a terrific job for USA Today. Yeah, spent like 6 days with the Cleveland Cavaliers and got to follow the traveling road show. And it's going to be an interesting story all year in the NBA, how those relationships are going to work out. And I think it's down to Kyrie Irving, really. I mean, LeBron's going to do what he has to do to win. We know that. LeBron's clutch. Kevin Love, we don't know about. Kevin Love has played in as many consequential basketball games as you and I combined. Never played in a playoff game. You have no idea what he's about. It's going to be Kyrie Irving, though. This is where, you know, this is where your point guard has to understand what he has to do to keep people happy. And the first thing you got to do when you're a point guard and you sit down and try to make people happy is realize that the one guy at the end of the day who's going to sacrifice the most is you. You're going to have to sacrifice your shots. It's that simple. It's not going to work otherwise. Yeah, you can figure out who you're going to pass to, when you're going to pass them, and where you're going to pass them. You can work that out. But the first step is realizing that you aren't the man anymore. It's not always right to think shoot first, pass second. And I think that's what the real issue is in Cleveland. That and the fact is, as Matt Devlin said the other day, you know, one of the things about Cleveland, their bench is not that good. You'll probably see Cleveland make a deal. There's a lot of talk about Andrei Kirilenko going to Cleveland. You'll probably see them make a deal at some point as well. But at the end of the day, it's not going to matter. If Kyrie Irving doesn't want to make it work, it ain't working. How about the Buffalo Bills? So much for, why do you even bother practicing? I've always thought this about football. I think training camp and practice is the biggest pile of crap in football. I don't think you need any of it. I mean, the Bills basically spend all week digging out of a snowstorm, helping their neighbors. They go into Detroit. They crush the Jets 38-3. Now, the Bills are 6-5. Think about this. They're 6-5. They got Cleveland coming in this weekend. They beat Cleveland. They're in the wild card race, at least until they run into Denver and Green Bay. But I'll tell you what, if they beat Cleveland, they're 7-5. Cleveland's 7-5. A couple of things about that game. We're going to send a bunch of people to that game, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're giving away tickets every day this week on Brady and Walker, this show, and Tim and Sid. We're going to give away a pair of tickets to see the Bills play the Cleveland Browns on November 30th in Buffalo. Suddenly the biggest game of the year. Plus exclusive pregame hospitality at Rogers Tap House. We're going to do that before 12 o'clock. And at 11:40, we're going to be joined by Sal Capaccio, the Bills sideline reporter and postgame host on WGR 550 in Buffalo. Sal Capaccio joins us, and we're going to give away some Bills tickets. We haven't figured out how we're going to do it yet, but we'll come up with something. This much I know for sure. You're going to have to hang around to find out how we do it. This is the Jeff Blair Show. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we are back. Hockey Central at noon is just around the corner. It will be Millard, Kiprios, and McLean. Jim Matheson, hockey columnist, senior writer with the Edmonton Journal, will join the boys at 12:40. Lots going on in Edmonton. The Oilers in Dallas tonight, bouncing from crisis to crisis. Everybody's waiting for the shoe to fall. In in Edmonton, and everybody's waiting for the Oilers to eventually move one of those young players for a more proven commodity to address their myriad issues. So Jim Matheson will join Hockey Central 12:40. They will be discussing the Oilers' precarious situation. The Bills' situation has gone from, I was going to say precarious, to playoffs. That's not entirely accurate. But after last night's 38-3 beatdown of the New York Jets in Detroit, the Bills find themselves 6-5, very much in the thick of the AFC wildcard race. Now, yes, they do have games against Denver and Green Bay coming up. But the fact of the matter is, at 6-5, if they beat Cleveland this weekend and go to 7-5 and pull the Browns down to 7-5, they will be in the playoff picture. They will have pulled themselves back into the playoff picture. Sal Capaccio is a Bills sideline reporter and postgame host on WGR 550 in Buffalo. And we're joined now by Sal. Before we get to Sal, though, I want to give you a chance to get a couple of tickets to see that Bills-Browns game and also get exclusive pregame hospitality at the Rogers Tap House. So let's see. Rex Ryan has there's 5 weeks left. Let's say that there's probably 5 weeks left in Rex Ryan's coaching career with the New York Jets. So the fifth caller through at 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590, will get a pair of tickets to see the Bills play the Browns in Buffalo November 30th. You'll also get exclusive pregame hospitality at Rogers Tap House. And Brady and Walker and Tim and Sid will be giving away tickets as well. We'll give away tickets the rest of the week. So again, the fifth caller through, 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. You'll be going to see the Bills in Cleveland. I don't know, maybe you can help them shovel. Sal Capaccio is the Bills sideline reporter and postgame host in WGR 550 in Buffalo. I presume the stadium is going to be shoveled out and everything anyhow. How you doing, Sal?
It's looks like everything's going to be good. There is some minor damage to the stadium and to the field house. The Bills are actually holding a press conference as we speak. Andy Major, who's the vice president of operations for the team, is going over the list of repairs that need work. But looks like everything's a go for Sunday, which is great news.
You know, watching the game last night, and I mean, I'm not one of these people who necessarily thinks that sports team winning, you know, is going to make everybody's life smoother. There's still a lot of snow. There's still a lot of water. There's still a lot of people just dealing with logistical issues. But Sal, I got to think that you know. For that city, having the Bills do what they did in the circumstances that they did it in, it's got to be, if nothing else, a big morale booster.
Absolutely. Listen, I mean, there's two things that can happen in a situation like that. You can either say, hey, you know, we don't have enough practice time, we're distracted, and not use it as an excuse. It would be, I think, legitimate in this case. You're thinking of your family that's back home. Some guys have infant kids. They're families without power, you know, they want to make sure that they have the resources they need to get through the next few days while they're gone. You're distracted. You can't prepare in time. And you go out there and you lay an egg. Or the second thing that could happen, which is what happened last night, I think you get galvanized by it a little bit. You rally around a common cause. You become a little closer to your teammates. You become a little closer for, you know, what you're, you know, out there playing for, which is a community and pride and fighting for people that, you know, really went through a really tough week. And that's what they did yesterday. I know they're better than the Jets. You know, the Jets aren't a very good team. The Bills proved that just a month ago. They beat them by 20 points. But they had to show that yesterday as well. I don't think anybody would have blamed them if they went out there and didn't play very well. But to win that way, the way they went out there and just dominated from start to finish, just showed a lot about you know, the character a lot of these guys have and what they played for.
Sal, what does it say about how a team prepares, though? Because, you know, teams, we know that coaches – you know, coaches break down everything, and boy, you have to have the right amount of practice and all this stuff. And sometimes it seems as if you just go into a game in a situation like this where you've been making stuff up on the fly or maybe simplifying things. And it's amazing how many times you have a certain amount of success. I mean, did the Bills basically work off their game plan earlier in the year against the Jets, or how did they approach that?
I think that was primarily the case. You know, it's funny you say that. I like to say, the old phrase paralysis by analysis. Mm-hmm. I think you get caught up in that when you try to overcoach, you overthink and you overdo everything and you prepare so much that maybe you're over-preparing sometimes instead of just letting the game flow and the game come to you. And I'll give you an example. Last night, you know, they had really major issues scoring in the red zone. And I think what they've really tried to do the last few weeks is trying to figure out so much of what's going on that they've pressed too hard. They've tried personnel changes. They've tried to have a different philosophy. You know what they did last night? They just played football. They did what got them down there. They didn't really do anything too elaborate, and they wound up scoring touchdowns in the red zone. So I think there is something exactly for what you just said there. And the other thing is, the only thing that really concerned me going into yesterday was the nutrition part of it, the, you know, getting your legs back under you. These are professional athletes. They're used to a routine. They're used to going in and getting their treatment on their injuries and having a specific nutrition plan. That was really more my concern. How lethargic would they be, you know, for a 60-minute game? Would the Jets take advantage as the game went on? The opposite happened in this game, which was amazing. They seemed to really get better as the game went on. The Bills started off pretty well. Then they took a, you know, they were a little bit slower as the in the second quarter, and then all of a sudden in the second half came on. So I agree with you. I think there was a lot of, there's a lot of paralysis by analysis in coaching, but it wasn't the case in this one. They just played. They went out and played football. The common theme was, they had fun last night. Guys said that. They had fun out there, and that's nice to see and nice to hear.
WGR Sal Capaccio joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. The other thing, too, that I think we saw last night is just what an asset it is to have a defensive line like the Bills have. I mean, you can game plan for anything, and you know, you can draw up schemes and all that good stuff, but if you've got three or four guys who are playing at the level that defensive line is playing at right now, that's almost a good starting point. That almost automatically gives you a leg up on the team. And you know, I mean, Mario Williams hasn't gotten an awful lot of credit this year, but he's got, what, 11.5 sacks. Jerry Hughes has 9.5. This really is the best defensive line in the NFL, isn't it?
It is. Mario Williams is playing the best football he's played in the Buffalo Bills uniform. I talked to him after the game last night, and he said he's playing with no pressure, and that's, which is kind of ironic because he's the guy that's putting out a lot of pressure to the other teams. But, you know, he said, and his funny quote was, "I'm in straight chill mode." And I think what he means is, you know, when he got here, he had a really lot of weight on him with that big contract he signed in the first game. He didn't have an impact against the Jets a couple years ago, and he complained about the guy holding him. And people were like, "Come on, dude! You know, you're making $16 million a year. You can't be complaining about that. Go make plays." Then he had the wrist injury that prevented him from really playing well. And then he had another issue when he showed up in training camp the second year. Then he went through the engagement situation and the ring and all that kind of stuff with his girlfriend. All that stuff is behind him. He's just playing football. He's just having fun. He truly is incredible. As a defensive unit overall, guys, 46 sacks this season. Last year they had 57, which was a team record. There's still 5 games left. They could break that record from last year, and that's after losing their defensive coordinator, Mike Pettine, who really was part of the reason to put him in a scheme to help him get that. So that just shows you how great of a year that this defense is having, especially this defensive line. If you took just the D-line, they would be third in the league in sacks, and that's not accounting linebackers or secondary.
Sal, the Bills have just confirmed that the game is a go at Ralph Wilson Stadium, which I think we probably all assume that, but the Bills have just confirmed the game is a go, and thanks so much for joining us today.
All right, thanks for having me, guys. Anytime.
Sal Capaccio is the Bills sideline reporter, post-game host on WGR 550 in Buffalo. You can follow him at Sal Sports. Does a terrific job. Love listening to WGR post-game, especially after the Bills have lost. Which they didn't do last night. The Bills beat the Jets 38-3. They're back in the playoff hunt, at least for a while. Steven Gesso in Toronto, Ontario, congratulations. You are going to see the Bills play the Browns in Buffalo on November 30th. You are our fifth caller through. You also get exclusive pregame hospitality at Rogers Tap House. Listen to Tim and Sid and Brady and Walker. They, plus this show, will be giving 2 tickets away to see that Bills game every day this week. That's it for the Jeff Blair Show. Hockey Central at noon is next. Millard, Kiprios, McLean, Jim Matheson, senior writer, national hockey columnist for the Edmonton Journal, will join the guys. Have a great day, everybody.